the MadTech podcast special, focusing on the most important topics in AdTech and MarTech.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the MadTech podcast. I'm Lindsay Rowntree, and today we have a special episode talking about media plan diversity. I've got two guests I want to introduce who will be discussing this with me. Karan Singh, who is Senior Commercial Director, Advertiser Partnerships at Xandr, and Serhat Akinci, Managing Director, Unite, part of Omnicom Media Group. Welcome, gentlemen. So this topic around media plan diversity, it's a fairly new phrase for me. It's not one I know a lot about. I know it's a big topic of conversation. Let's set the scene. I want to understand what we actually mean by media plan diversity. And Serhat, actually, this is a good chance as well to kind of understand more about what you do at Omnicom. Unite being a diversity-driven kind of agency, if you like, within Omnicom, kind of, and how media plan diversity is becoming part of what it is that you're doing with your clients.
Thanks, Lindsay. So I'm the MD of Unite. We are OMG's diversity-driven marketing division and agency. So we work with our clients within our agencies as well as beyond to help them sort of diversify their approach when it comes to media content and marketing to be inclusive of underrepresented groups. And the reason behind it is that I myself have worked in a lot of big agencies previously. And one of the things that I find quite not right is that, you know, we are sort of the masters of stereotypes that we look at every brief by age, gender as in women and men, or location. You know, we slice and dice data all the time in those demographic aspects, but we never look at things such as ethnicity, religion, sexuality, or disability, things that potentially affect us as human beings more than anything else. So within Unite, we sit at the parent group company working with all of our agencies. And our whole motto is about, and there are about 20 of us, is to move clients from unconscious exclusion to conscious inclusion. By that, we mean we look at each individual brief with cultural lenses. So things that I mentioned, like ethnicity, race, sexuality, and how it affects their lifestyles, the media that they may consume, or the content, or the people that they may follow, and how we integrate that into in every single stage of our media approach, be it the planning, buying, even as much as going into creators, like the influencers that you put on the brief and how relevant they are.
Brilliant. That's a really helpful intro. And it sets the scene very well of kind of some of the things we want to talk about today, from planning and buying to creative execution, and how marketers and agencies can get involved and start having those conversations. And so in terms of media plan diversity specifically, kind of, you know, for someone like me who hasn't really heard the term before and doesn't understand it, does this refer to buying from minority-owned businesses? Does it refer to targeting minority audiences? Is it all of the above? Kind of how are we defining what media plan diversity is and, I guess, will be as it's in its very nascent form right now?
Happy to give it a go first. So from our perspective within Unite, that's the first question that we ask the clients. A, do you want to do it for business perspective, as in because of business goals, or do you want to do it for doing good to the society? The way we define it within our team is looking at who your audience is, then based on that, creating plans that are inclusive of them. So what I mean by that is if a certain group of audiences do not fall within your target audience, we may not include them. Or if they do fall and over-index, we might upweight the media and content that they consume. So to answer your question, it will change from client to client, category to category. But the way we look at it is one aspect of it from a pure diversification of channels is, let's say, even if you're doing influencer campaign as an example, do you have talent that represents your audiences as well within your influencer mix? From a digital perspective, as a good example, do you look into sort of things like keyword blocking? Does it affect where your ad is seen? Is it being blocked so that the content that is consumed by these communities are actually, your ads can appear there? And in terms of your inclusion list, as an example, do you have a wider mix that includes media outlets that may not normally be part of your usual mix? So there is, again, in Unite in particular, we do highlight two potential challenges or put that to the client is around minority targeted, minority owned. In the UK in particular, 99% of minority media is not owned by minorities or not sold by minorities. So there is that element of that goes into equality element. So we do highlight that. And at least within Unite, we're quite proud because last year alone, we spent 15 million with minority owned businesses. So it's something we do care about from an equality perspective. But we do look at the media metrics. What I mean by that is if they're not delivering what we need for the client, we're not going to go on and use them for the sake of using it. A bit like, let's say, if we're reaching out to third generation ethnic minorities who are more likely to consume social than, let's say, a digital platform made for them. As an example, we might go for social. Just defining the audience will be different than how you would do it on general media briefs.
The reason that this kind of triggered my interest, and both Serhat and I do some work outside of our day-to-day jobs around kind of inclusion within our industry, and I was certainly hearing a lot about media plan diversity and brands wanting to get more involved in that. What became quickly apparent for me is having conversations with brands is a lot of the time they didn't know what they wanted to achieve or what that actually meant for them. And I guess, Serhat, your team being experts in that, I guess would help facilitate that. And for me as well, to be completely honest, I didn't know off from the offset what a diverse media plan actually looked like, which is why I reached out to you and we had a chat and some others. I just know that everyone wanted to kind of move into that direction. So for me, that the answers that I get back is, partly, we want our media plans to be inclusive. Secondly, we want to support minority-owned businesses. But there wasn't a lot beyond that from what I could gather.
It's an odd topic because, like I said, Karen, like I actually worked in mainstream agencies all my life, whether it's research or earned or paid. So I'm not from a multicultural or diversity agency background. But one of the things I always found hilarious was 99% of the briefs or that I worked on, even when I am, let's say, by age, fall into that category, to that target audience, most of the briefs didn't fully represent me. What I mean by that, as an example, I'm a first gen here, but I do consume a lot of mainstream media versus diversity media. But I give a good example. I'm a bit of an extreme, but my wife is from an Asian continent, completely different and mixed. So when I go to their side, they consume completely different media. I'm there. I never see any big brands. Then when I, let's say, consume Turkish media, where I'm originally from, it's always Turkish brands. And then when I go to my other side, they consume, let's say, Chinese media and no mainstream brands are there. And I find it quite funny in the sense of all the briefs and responses I worked on never represented me fully. There's always missed touch points. Yes, I might see some out of form or on social, a few targeted. And the bit that pushed me into this role was every brand only wanted to speak to us, when they have a 10 kilos of rice, which is quite stereotypical or product specifically made for minorities. And as we have a joke in our team, we do... we eat tomatoes. Like, we have a joke with clients. Some clients say, oh, we don't have a specific product. I'm like, well, actually, I shop at Waitrose. That's because convenience is next to my house, as an example. But in the eyes of brands, they'll never see me as a Waitrose shopper. So that's the bit we talk to clients about, like, diversifying your whole approach versus, oh, it's Pride or it's Ramadan. Oh, I've got this product from an overseas that minorities will consume, and diversifying that element. So we work with the clients, but we have to ask a good example of it. One of them was a key worker campaign. So as an example, we had a client of ours. The target audience was ABC1 for key workers. And I literally called them out. I said, "That's AB is not your key workers. Are you doing it to tell these your customers that you care about them? Like, this is it more performative what you're trying to do, or is it, are you actually want to talk to the key workers and thank them? And I think that's what we facilitate. So we go in and almost define what inclusivity means, because I think there's a whole thing sold around inclusivity of all, but in practical terms, it's very, very difficult. There are hundreds of different ethnicities, as an example, different generations. It even differs from region to region, and they have all different types of media. And if I go to a client and say, here's an example, I mean, I'm not saying you have to have an Indian in a creative to speak to an Indian audience, but if I say, you know, you have to have, in London alone, you've got 300 plus languages spoken. If I say you have to have all these languages, all different artists, actors and actresses, you have to use all different media formats, it just becomes a immense task. And that's just multicultural. We haven't gone into disability or LGBTQ, and defining these audiences become a nightmare as well. It's what is most relevant to your product and brand. Unless you want to do it just, let's say, I don't know, just to showcase, support everyone, that's fine. But I think media plan diversity, I always see almost two lines. One is, whenever you have a mix, make sure that mix, from a digital perspective, have diverse media outlets in it as part of the mix. Then there is the push for mainstream channels. I think that's the bit that people also forget. How do you push, let's say, print titles as an example, whether it's digital or offline, to diversify their content, whether it's the journalists that work on it or the content that they create? Or sometimes we see partnerships where the people that they put forward to create the content is not very diverse. So we almost play that role of the guardians of diversity and defining it for the client, because they don't know how to define it.
And I want to dig into a lot of that later, because that raises up a lot of questions, Serhat. But Karan, from your perspective in Xander and with the work that you're doing in Xander from a diversity perspective, but also kind of from a you're now trying to have these conversations with buyers as well. How does media plan diversity and kind of, I guess, a more inclusive approach to media planning and buying in general impact how you're trying to kind of approach this as a company, but also kind of how does it change some of the conversations you're trying to have with the buyers you work with as well?
Yeah, so I think as an approach, we try and partner with brands kind of at the strategic level, right? I think the partnership always works better when we understand what an advertiser is trying to achieve, rather than just providing them with a piece of tech to facilitate whatever they're doing and whatever conversations they're having with the agency. So key to us is understanding the conversations they're asking Serhat or their mainstream agency about what they want to achieve. And core to that is, you know, brands are always keeping up with societal shifts. They're trying to do the right thing. They're trying to make sure that they capture and engage with their audiences, many of which come from diverse backgrounds, right? So for us, as a tech provider, there's some stuff that we can do that just kind of helps at least kind of dip our toe in and actually start actioning some of the stuff that they're talking about. So when we started hearing about this, the first thing that we kind of thought was around our curation product, right? So essentially what curation means is basically leveraging our marketplace, taking our supply partnerships that we've got and actually packaging them up so they're easier to buy. One of the things that I would see as a huge challenge for someone like Serhat and brands trying to action in this space is, if you're trying to talk to a specific minority group and there are, I don't know, 10 to 15, for argument's sake, different kind of media outlets that might represent that group, and all of which provide a kind of, I suppose, partly niche and have to be lumped together to provide some sort of scale, to do that manually takes a lot of time, a lot of effort, and actually becomes a really inefficient way to buy media. So through curation, what we can do is basically bundle those things up and make those viable as a one big scalable deal, essentially, to make that process easier. So for me as a tech provider, understanding what the challenge is here, understanding what the operational challenges are from the agency level to being able to achieve that, and then us using what tools we have at our disposal, curation being a key one, to help facilitate that is something that springs to mind. And I don't think that solves all the answers, right? I don't think through curation we're going to achieve media plan diversity, because it needs to touch across all different media types, and it needs to kind of, I think it needs to do more. But at least it takes us from talking about it to doing it, to testing it, to seeing what works, to seeing what doesn't work. And from there, we can have continuous learnings and innovation can be built off that, and we can take that back to our businesses. And I think that's the real interesting thing for us as a business. And I think we're starting to get to that place now, which I think is really, really exciting.
Yeah, definitely. And it's a starting point, right? As you say, like, you're not saying you're going to solve the massive issue of diversity and inclusion in the world, but you are actually, but it takes it from beyond a conversation to action in some way. And then there's a few points I want to raise here. One is, and it makes me think of kind of advertising campaigns, as, you know, with a lot of brands that are very scared to start because they're scared of doing something and doing it wrong. And we've seen many brands get it very, very wrong. But, you know, there's an example of, I'm going to reference John Lewis, and John Lewis trying to showcase LGBTQ+ community, and with its recent home insurance ad, and it got a lot of backlash for doing it really, really badly. But there is a lot of school of thought saying, well, at least they tried, and we shouldn't be lambasting people for trying, because if they try and they do it wrong, rather than saying you've done a terrible job, go and say we support you and we'll help you do a better job next time. We appreciate you putting the effort in. So how do you educate brands to kind of help them understand that there is a need to try, but also not make it purely a box ticking exercise? And then beyond that as well, and so how you mentioned this earlier, make sure that it actually ties in with what your actual campaign goals are. And if it's not, you can't buy, for example, in a curated PMP, I can buy lots of different inventory from minority owned businesses or targeting minority audiences or targeting diverse and inclusive audiences. But if none of them are actually effective, am I just doing it to check a box and say I'm doing it? And actually, what is the further point of it? So there's a lot of questions there, a lot of things to think about. But how do you bring all these confusing things together? Because it's very complicated. How does a brand even start?
I think the first thing to note is that you can't buy sincerity. So you can buy the media titles and all that comes with that. But if at the heart of what you're doing is not genuine, it's not sincere, you're never going to achieve the ultimate goal, which is to engage with the audience. I think as a minority consumer, I would see straight through something that is just ticking a box, as opposed to something where I look at it, I engage with it, it's either nostalgic or it engages with me in a way, or I build some sort of emotional connection to that kind of brand through the kind of type of communication that they're doing. I think it comes through really, really quickly. And a lot of brands do it. They kind of, the proof's in the pudding, right? They do it with their work outside of just advertising, right? So if you are a brand making sustainable clothing, what are you giving back in terms of sustainability outside of just advertising? So what is your business model? How much percentage of profits are you delivering back? So a lot of consumers are, they're wise to what a business is all about, and they have all the information that can help them make informed decisions about who they buy from. So having an ad on, talking to South Asians on ZTV is not going to be enough if the actual thought and kind of process behind it is not there. And clearly, the John Lewis example that you used, there was a lot of people that felt that maybe that wasn't there. But I agree to your point that me personally, and it's just a personal opinion, I would rather brands tried if the sincerity is there and they were trying to be genuine and be inclusive, get it slightly wrong, work, learn, and then improve it, rather than just we stay where we are today. So for me, that would kind of be where my head's at on that.
Yeah, interesting. And so I'm interested in your perspective on that as well. Like, how do you, brands must come to you and they're trying to start their diversity and inclusion journey, but they're terrified because of the backlash that might happen. And how do I make sure that I'm actually doing this meaningfully and not just doing it so that the kind of the board will think that we're doing the right thing and trying to achieve a quota?
Yeah, I mean, first is, well, personal, based on experience as well. It's a lot easier to talk about it now than, when I joined 5 years ago, it was almost like an alien point. When I said, you need to do this, people would just stare at me as if I was from a different place. But you have to try it, right? But to give you an analogy, it's a bit like business. You start a business, you make mistakes, isn't it? Not everything is plain sailing and no issues. especially when it comes to diversity, it's even much more complex. Like one example I always give is we do a lot of Muslim campaigns as well, let's say during Ramadan, but even Muslims in itself, they're so diverse, as in, you know, you'll find a Muslim girl with a headscarf, one without a headscarf. They're all different ethnicities, so there's that cultural aspect element. So if you try to get everything right, you'll never get it right, and you'll just be sitting and just working on it, planning it forever. So you have to start somewhere. But I think the key element, that's what I love about Unite as well, and everyone should do this as well. You need to get people, whatever you're doing, you need to get people from those communities to be at the heart of it. So you don't, what you don't want is, whether you're doing something creative or planning or buying, you don't want a room of, you know, it's 20 people working there, and you've got this brown or black girl or woman that you call in to represent everything. Whereas that's what makes Unite beautiful, in the sense of collectively from, we're from all different backgrounds, in LGBTQ disability, multicultural. So we work collectively versus being the odd one that works on a campaign and people come to for answers, you know, to represent every minority in that sense. So you need to get people at the heart of it versus being a consultant that you talk to for an hour and then you expect to receive an answer. What that means is every nitty gritty bit of it, because culture is very difficult to learn through books, and you need to live the culture to learn it. A bit like, I don't know every culture. That's why I have people from all different backgrounds to be my consultant or own projects. So put those people at the heart of it and listen to it. I know it sounds very cliche, but everyone still gets it wrong. I still see campaigns, especially those that go wrong. They don't have people that they are supposed to represent behind the campaign. They might have just consulted them, but whether it's the production or the media selection that you do, exactly what Karen said, like, you don't want someone just to put ZTV and say that represents South Asians. There's a lot of different types of South Asians as well. And some of them, a lot of them won't consume ZTV either. There'll be a lot of first generation British born media outlets. There is South Asians as well, but very different to ZTV. I think the core is to, coming back to, is to keep the people from that culture to be at the heart of that process versus being the odd one in the room that you just ask random questions to make sure that it's not culturally insensitive. But yeah, try it in a nutshell. You get to a point by trial, right?
Yeah. And this is where I guess, Karen, this is where, you know, display advertising is could be very, very powerful in terms of diversity targeting, in the sense of, you know, a TV ad will try to be as inclusive as possible and try to include as many different types of different backgrounds in one TV ad as possible. But actually, when it comes to, and you've both given some great examples, comes to actually kind of how I as a consumer consume. For example, I shop at Waitrose. I don't just buy rice. I consume many other things that you know, that the white person next to me will also consume. How can I be targeted with stuff by a brand that's specifically talking to me and not just me as part of everybody else? So that's where I find display is an interesting part of this conversation. How do you think display and indeed marketplace curation can kind of help brands inform their business strategies and help them go, okay, I've got, and also achieve some creative integrity in this as well, right? So from a display advertising perspective, I've got these different audiences, niche, diverse, inclusive audiences, but I want to make sure I'm speaking to each of them as if they are individuals. In a world where cookies don't, you know, cookies are not going to exist, it's a very, very different way of being able to target. But how can I kind of achieve that sort of personalization at scale perspective, achieve creative integrity? There's a lot of things to achieve here. Ensure that I am speaking to them as if I know they are one of my potential consumers.
Yeah, so I think the creative integrity bit is super important here, right? And Serhat touched on this, and I mentioned around myself, I'm the consumer I know best. I don't consume many or any kind of minority-based media. And I'm sure there's lots of people like me in the kind of same boat. And for me, what's really important is the creative execution and actually having a meaningful relationship with that and the message that's coming across. And I think that some of that's kind of got lost in the just going out and buying you know, minority owned or minority based media outlets. I think one of the things that we found is super important and super performant, and has been for a while, even when we're talking about it outside of the context of kind of diversity, is this concept of splits, right? And it's something that's achievable through display and via programmatic. It's where you can have dynamic creative based on things like the part of the country that you're in, right? So to Serhat's point around, in his example, all Muslims being different, loads of pockets within that community being different. The same if you're talking about, I don't know, the LGBTQ community or the South Asian community in different parts of the country, they might need to be engaged with that differently, right? So for example, South Asians up north versus from London, you might have completely different creative messaging. And that's achievable via things like splits, where you can really easily use the technology to change your message based on parts of the country or pretty much by any parameter that you choose. I find that's how you can really achieve that element of personalization, talk directly to me as a consumer, engage with me, build a relationship with me, possibly on the mainstream media outlets that I consume anyway. So the fact that you don't have to go and necessarily talk to me as a consumer, buy against some of the minority-based media outlets, that for me, I think is super important. And things like splits that we've been using and we've been seeing as being performant for so long, I think driving that into the context of helping media plans become more inclusive, I think that's going to be hugely important. And again, it's all down to getting the execution right. But I think from a strategic perspective, using tools like that, I think is going to be key.
And Serhat, what's your perspective on channel selection when it comes to diversity targeting and diversity in media planning and buying? Do you think that actually the channels like display are kind of a very, very kind of will be a beneficial tool for brands being able to do this right and not just do it because they're trying to achieve, you know, as we talked about earlier, a box checking exercise?
No, absolutely. I think display is probably one of the, if not the most important channels because of what you can do on it versus typical TV or print or radio in that sense. And we have been using it a lot within OMG across what we call mainstream campaigns, also bespoke campaigns, whether it's Diwali or Ramadan for certain communities. And to exactly Karen's point is, even when we build it previously, we do a lot of contextual keyword targeting. So not necessarily looking at, so we do put diverse media outlets as part of the mix, but, you know, as let's say for a food client, if it's about recipes, I want to reach those audiences when they're looking for recipes, regardless of what media type they're on or what media channel on. And I think although there's going to be a cookie list world, which will be a lot more interesting, but that's where the context comes into place a lot more, in the sense of it's not just a case of, you know, which is very important as well. You do put the channel, you know, you still curate channel list and you don't keep them as a separate box, but you put it as part of your day-to-day usual mix, whatever campaign you run, and you can still create bespoke channel list for certain campaigns, i.e. when you have a South Asian target. As an example, you might just use those 15 sites that Karen was mentioning. But I think the beauty comes with the fact that you can actually use context within display to create things and then still, you know, drive equality by including those sites as part of your mix. But go after exactly what Karen said, regardless of what type of media they're on, as in whether it's mainstream or diversity media, you reach these audiences. So within display, you can build that touch point to make sure that you do reach them at each individual stage, and the tech is there as well. Yeah,
and I guess rethink your relationship with block lists or suppression lists as well, yeah, when it comes to anything sort of contextual or keyword based buying.
Definitely, but I think it's already, I don't know, maybe it's OMG, but we've already removed them for a long time ago. We do category-based blocking. So which means, you know, I'm sure you've seen the stuff around sort of, you know, words like Muslim or gay or lesbian. They're some of the most blocked words due to some what I call lazy blocking ideas that they relate to certain things, be it ISIS or porn. Definitely remove them. But at the same time, then you do need to go through your channel mix. And we we, for instance, have different views on, so let's say from diversity media, we might have different perspective because, you know, some of them, let's say the word Muslim, it could even be in their actual brand name, or a word Muslim, because it's a Muslim publication, it's everywhere. We would never use that. But it could be that when you're doing it on a certain, if you're doing it on a mainstream channel and that is known to be quite aggressive against Muslims, we might use that keyword blocking because that content can be seen as a hatred versus progressive. So something you can't, like a one, that's the thing with DNI, I think the diversity media planning in particular, everyone, there is no one magic pill that you, or a button that you put, press and it fixes it. It's you have to take it plan by plan and adapt it brief by brief.
You can see straight away why, and Lindsay, you mentioned it around kind of brands' reticence to kind of actually dive in and start doing it with all the pitfalls that Serhat's describing around kind of keywords and all those kind of bits and pieces and getting creative wrong, etc. I think, I don't know, and Serhat, you might have a view on this, it's how are you getting the brands to be more confident in kind of taking the leap? Because obviously, I suppose then John Lewis is suffering it a bit now. There's obviously the chance for reputational damage getting it wrong. And there's so many areas where you can get it wrong. Like, how as a partner are you supporting them in kind of getting it right or giving them the confidence to kind of take the leap?
Yeah, I think exactly what you said, right? You need to work with partners to support it. And it's like any other campaign, whether it's diversity driven or not, or you know, I give Christmas one as an example all the time. We put turkeys, but I have a lot of white British friends that do not eat turkey during Christmas. Do you get what I mean?
It's yeah, like, I don't. I think, yeah.
There you go. Mine is lamb, shoulder. But if you just waited and tried to find the perfect, which doesn't exist, we'll be sitting and doing it. And I think even what John Lewis, again, I'm not from the LGBTQ community. I may not be the right person to comment on it, and we didn't work on it. But I actually find the campaign really fun, the creative. But again, it's me. Again, I wouldn't be the right person to judge it in that sense. But a lot of people did love it as well. So it's diversity always drives controversy. But that doesn't mean you should stay away from it, especially if you're trying to do it for the right reasons. And I think John Lewis was trying to do it for right reasons versus trying to be provocative and, you know, create issues. But yeah, I think you need to try, be brave. You know, we keep telling people about it, but, and it's not just about being brave either. You're trying to represent your consumers. I don't even see that as a bravery. It's just trying to make your work representative of your target audience.
I think that's the key phrase right there, isn't it? You are trying to represent your consumers, and any attempt you do to try to do to achieve that should be lauded, not criticized.
Yeah, and you learn, right? You learn as well. You learn by those. I'm sure John Lewis had a lot of learnings from this that will apply to the next. But I do 100% recommend for brands not to shy away, because that is not the solution. And I think one bit that people always forget is younger generations, let's say people below 35, are a lot more diverse and a lot more smarter in the sense of seeing it through. If you're not doing it authentically, they'll just, you're basically shooting yourself in the shoes if you're not doing anything about it now. Because when these guys are in power, they're not going to love your brand as much if you're not doing anything about it.
But I think that it's, you know, we talked about this at the very beginning. We said, you know, it's better to actually act rather than just talk about it and be, are you being active or passive in this conversation? It's going to have a bit of a snowball effect, isn't it? If people are seen to be trying it, then other brands will kind of feel the confidence and feel more comfortable in doing it as well. And having teams, companies like Unite, Serhat, kind of helping them along the way as well. We're seeing more and more kind of diversity teams in within agencies across the entire supply chain. Are we seeing any meaningful examples of it in a display advertising perspective at the moment, or are we still in the very early stages?
I think from my perspective, we're still very much in the early stages. So it's still on in terms of discussion. And that for me is what we're trying to kind of, I think having these conversations is really important to actually provide some solutions to move things forward. Because I think if we just stick to kind of where we're at and we talk about it conceptually continually, we're just never going to never get to a place where we kind of lift the lid and say, okay, this is what happens when we try this, where we try, you know, using splits to target different creative in different parts of the country or to different target groups, or using curation to go into some niche minority owned media platforms and actually seeing how they perform. It might be that those actually just are the most performant media outlets for you, right? So from basic performance level, we haven't even tested them to say, right, okay, these could be super important because we can't get the scale there. So through curation, we're able to go and do that, right? And then again, talking around kind of giving brands the confidence to say, right, okay, well, you need to do it. It's you're asking about it because society is shifting in that way and the consumer is demanding to see brands represent their morals. So as long as it's genuine and you have that from within the organization and you need to get that message out, then you should be actioning that. And I think it's a conversation that when I'm talking to brands, it's coming up more and more, but it's still not coming up enough. And I don't think it's a big enough part of the conversation. So for me, where I'm seeing it at the moment is we still have the kind of core target groups that a business wants. And then at the end of an RFP, we might say, okay, and how can we be more inclusive or how can we be more representative? And I don't think it can be at the end. I think it needs to be part of your core strategy if you want to do it properly. And I don't think it's forming part of that yet to any kind of meaningful degree. And that's what I'd love to see more of moving forward.
And you're both very active in diversity and inclusion groups, societies within your respective companies, and also beyond that as well. Do you think that, you know, if what do you say to kind of to minorities in companies that want to create something similar? And do you think that actually kind of having these diversity conversations and ensuring that they are front and center in any given company could also actually help lead the charge on media plan diversity and help brands see it from a different perspective, or help companies like Xander be able to go and have conversations with their partners and clients? Can it help from the inside out, if you like?
Do you know what I found really interesting as part of that work? And I was helping someone find a role within diversity inclusion because a contract was coming to an end. And it turns out that the bulk of the roles within diversity and inclusion are 6 to 12 month contracts, which got me thinking, how important is this to businesses? Or are they trying to plug a gap which they see as a kind of trend that might not be there in 12 months that they don't want to commit to? Because for me as a business, if you want to live and breathe D&I, you're not going to solve it in 12 months and it's going to be there forever. So I was quite surprised to see that, and actually helping people navigate through that was quite an eye-opener for me. In terms of seeing that, I found it really surprising. So I actually think a lot of businesses out there might not have the full commitment to this. And I think that will come through in their comms and their advertising. So I think from a business perspective, I found that probably one of the most interesting things of the work that we've been doing outside of the day to day.
That's very worrying, I would say, that as you say, that is, are they taking it seriously, or are they seeing it as a short-term solution? It ties in with what you said, Sir, earlier, is that you can tell if a campaign has not had somebody represented in the ad or in the campaign behind the lens, if you like. They've only had a consultant working on it. And if you're only bringing consultants in on a short-term basis, surely you're not actually doing any of the meaningful work that you claim to be doing when it comes to anything D&I related. What are your thoughts on that, Sir?
Yeah, coming back to it, I think that's what sort of made me move a lot of jobs within mainstream sides and then move into this when the opportunity came, and that was 5 years ago, where I think all my friends called me crazy because I had a massive team, 20 people managing 50 others. They're like, you're going into a team with one person. And then the terminology, which I hate, ethnic marketing, this is this dead end, this the but I knew there was an opportunity to change the norms, and which is now working. We've proven it over the last 5 years as well. And I think one bit that always made me really go crazy, we talk about D&I always from a people and culture perspective. But how do you expect people to feel like they belong when the work you ask them to create is not representative of themselves or the people that they're mostly around, right? And I think some brands do take it seriously. Like now, we would previously, what I call, we were beggars. That was my joke. And we're choosers now. We would go to clients constantly to show they're doing it the wrong way. They should be doing more. Whereas now they run after us. Yes, there is. I think there are some clients that want to do it because it's the trend or their boss from US or another place told them to look into it. But I do feel there are some brands that are genuine. And I think it's a bit like D&I in general, forget about organizations. You have people that really care about it, regardless of their ethnicity or gender or sexuality, right? And they just care about people. They're good people. Then you'll have people that will have very different perspectives. And I think those right at the extreme ones, you can't change them. You just have to let them go. And I think some brands will be like that as well. They'll just, regardless of you, whatever you do about it, then they'll never take it on board because they have their own perceptions in their head. But that's the bit I was talking about, the younger generations, as in it's not even the, you know, younger people below 35. They are coming into power and they have different perspectives of how they see diversity versus someone in their 60s, as an example. They've been brought up in a completely different environment and have different views. That will, I think, eventually change. The bit that I think that's across all D&I, when companies see it as, let me recruit one D&I person, it will solve the thing. But the way I personally see it is almost like a, it needs to be like IT and finance, as an example. You know, IT sets up your laptops, the tools, or they negotiate it with suppliers or whatever, make sure they run properly. There needs to be almost like a set of people that helps you do that, whether it's the training and what you need to do when it comes to marketing or HR, whatever. Then you, as the people working in the company, you run it. And then if you have questions, you go back to these guys to say, I don't get this, or it's not working, what should I do? But people don't see it as that. They just want, okay, let me just recruit a, you know, brown, black person or whatever. And then somehow they'll magically, with one person, fix everything. But I think people are waking up to it. They just don't know what to do with it. And it's moving so fast that some of them are not in a place to sort of step back and say, actually, we don't know anything about this. Can we just take some baby steps to get there? Not saying go slowly, but let's think about it properly. This is not something we've done. Let's reach out to other people to get advice on how to do things. And that goes across, you know, it's not whether it's internal or external, as in client outputs or people side of it. I think some are taking it seriously. Like within D&I roles, as an example, I sort of feel I wouldn't be able to find a role within what I've been doing in another company because it doesn't exist. A lot of them are around people and like a HR related roles. But in reality, I think culture is so important in client outputs to consumers, but no one really thinks about it as a norm.
There's been so much covered in this conversation. If I could ask you both to boil all of everything we've talked about down into kind of one key point, and I guess piece of advice for brands that want to start having this conversation and want to start, in fact, no, going beyond the conversation, start actually actively looking into media plan diversity. How would you summarize kind of the best starting point for them? Karen, I'll start with you.
Yeah, so for me, I think you hit the nail on the head. Let's move beyond the conversation. Let's get going. It would be my advice, right? Which is, let's move it off asking for recommendations at the back of a media plan, and let's start testing stuff. Because through curation, through splits, through teams like Unite, and there is the support out there to guide brands through this, and the tech then to go and actually go and test against it. So my advice to brands would be like, let's test it, let's learn. And as we learn, I think we'll be shocked by the innovation that's spun out of it, because it will become part of what you're doing rather than part of what you're just saying. And that's the exciting thing for me.
Brilliant. Serhat, what about you?
Start at the beginning of your journey, any brief. When you define the audiences, look at it from a diversity perspective and let that be exactly what Karen said, not the bottom of the plan. In every brief that you create, in every stage, whether it's planning or individual channels or execution, let it be at the heart of it. Like, make sure that everyone knows that certain percentage of your audiences are from XYZ, and it becomes part of the question, everything you do, poke it. But that's why in Unite we talk about moving clients from unconscious exclusion to conscious inclusion, because I think a lot of the things that they do, I don't think they're done on purpose, but you consciously need to poke to make sure people do the right thing, if that makes sense. But yeah, right from the strategy into how you define your audiences, make sure you look at the diversity spectrums and let it, don't let it wash away. Just make sure everything you get as a response, there is something as part of that response. So it becomes the normal way of thinking.
Brilliant. Thank you so much to both of you. I think it's been a fascinating conversation. I've certainly learned so much. I think our listeners will find this really interesting as well. So Karen and Serhat, thank you so much for joining me.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks so much. Thank you very much, Lindsay.
Really appreciate it, Lindsay.
And this has been the Mad Tech Podcast. Thank you for listening.